Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Well, again, good evening, everyone. So tonight I thought I would talk about this topic of emptiness, which is so fundamental to Buddhism. And the title of tonight's teaching is Filling Up on Emptiness, to make the subject even more confusing. Emptiness, a translation of the Sanskrit word sunyata, is a central teaching of all Buddhism, but its true meaning is often misunderstood. The teachings, practice, and realizations of emptiness have been important themes in Buddhism from the time of the Buddha on through the development of the Mahayana and Zen Buddhism. Emptiness is not complete nothingness. It doesn't mean that nothing exists at all, and this would be just contrary to common sense. What emptiness refers to is the reality that nothing has a fixed identity. Everything is changing. The idea of emptiness can be traced back to the early Buddhist teachings of the Pali Canon, where it was presented as a way to understand the nature of the self or the soul, and the impermanent and interdependent nature of all phenomena. In a teaching on emptiness, the Buddha pointed to a chariot and asked his disciples, "Where is the essence of the chariot? Is it in the wheels? In the seat? The axle? The cart?" Of course, none of the constituent parts contains the essence of the chariot, and each part broken down into smaller parts is devoid of that singular essence. Like the chariot, this self we cherish is nothing more than a temporary coming together of various conditions. After the Buddha's passing, this idea of emptiness was further developed in the Mahayana Buddhist tradition, which emerged around the first century before Common Era. Mahayana thinkers began to explore the idea of emptiness in greater depth, emphasizing the interconnectedness of all phenomena. One of the most influential Mahayana texts on emptiness is the Prajnaparamita Sutras, which presents emptiness as the ultimate nature of reality and as a way to overcome suffering and achieve enlightenment. These texts introduced the concept of two truths, which distinguishes between conventional truth, everyday experience, and ultimate truth, the emptiness of all phenomena. And these two truths are also referred to as the relative and absolute truths. The Heart Sutra, which we just chanted, is part of these Perfection of Wisdom writings. Over time, the concept of emptiness continued to evolve in different Buddhist schools and traditions. The Heart Sutra, possibly the best known text of Mahayana Buddhism, is said to be the pure distillation of wisdom, or prajna. The Heart Sutra is also among the shortest of sutras, and perhaps the most paradoxical. An English translation can easily be printed on one side of a piece of paper. The precise origin of the Heart Sutra is unknown. However, some scholars believe that Ananda may have played an important role. And Ananda was the Buddha's tenant. It is reported that he had a vast recollection of the Buddha's teachings, or he had a photographic memory, in a way. The Heart Sutra wouldn't have been known yet as the Heart Sutra, since the Mahayana had not emerged as a movement in India until, as I just mentioned, the first century. Perhaps because of its brevity, the Heart Sutra is the most familiar of all the original teachings of the Buddha. The version of which we chant here comprises a mere 264 characters. The Heart Sutra is recited daily at Buddhist monasteries and Zen centers around the world. In the Sutra, Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion, answers with the profound words, "Form is emptiness, emptiness is form." She then proceeds to state the emptiness of the five aggregates, or skandhas. The emptiness of form, feelings, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. These are the five aspects of existence that comprise a human being. As I had mentioned, the Buddhist notion of emptiness is often misunderstood. And a common misunderstanding is that emptiness is nihilism. However, the only thing that nihilism and the teachings of emptiness can be said to have in common is a skeptical outset. While nihilism concludes that reality is unknowable and that nothing meaningful can be communicated about the world, the Buddhist notion of emptiness arrives at just the opposite, namely, that ultimate reality is knowable, that there is a clear-cut basis for phenomena, and that we can communicate and derive useful knowledge from it about the world. And the vehicle for this is wisdom and compassion. So what I'd like to do is to share a reading from Paradise in Plain Sight, Lessons from a Zen Garden, by Karen Mazin Miller, who is a Zen priest and teacher at the Hazy Moon Zen Center in Los Angeles. And this comes from a chapter called Bamboo, a Forest of Emptiness. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. This single phrase is the summation of the Buddhist path, the culminating insight of the way. But having uttered it, I've already strayed from it. Having read it, you've missed it, because now your mind is running amok trying to understand it, and here I am trying to chase after you. So let's come back together in one big empty space and start over. What looks solid is not solid. What has no shape comes in all shapes. In a physical sense, bamboo is strong because it is hollow. It is supple, resilient. It bends without breaking. It supports incredible weight. It grows unimpeded by any known barrier, spreading outward everywhere. This is true of you too. Where do you think you begin and end? At your feet? At your head? Your skin? Your eyes, nose, mouth, ears? Your thoughts, memory, feelings? Those three are the skandhas. The way we limit ourselves imposes a bunker mentally and defies reality. We experience our lives through the senses, a truly marvelous thing. In the split second after pure cognition of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking, we form a reaction to a sense object, attraction or aversion, liking or disliking, the subjective judgment of good or bad. No matter how we react to our environment, the environment has no gripe with us. Every war is a war with ourselves. Everything is empty and ephemeral. We can turn anything into a weapon to wreak havoc and destroy peace, and we do. Human beings fight 100-year wars. If you doubt any of this, remember what you took on faith in fourth grade science. All matter is composed of atoms. Atoms are empty space. By definition, you can't see emptiness. You can't even imagine it. But you can be it. You already are it. Now, to live and let live in emptiness, that's the secret of paradise. It's a secret hidden in plain sight, but it can take you forever to crack the code. First, be quiet. Give away your ideas, self-certainty, judgments, and opinions. Drop your personal agenda. Let go of defenses and offenses. Face your critics. They will always outnumber you. Lose all wars. All wars are lost to begin with. Abandon your authority and entitlements. Release your self-image, status, power, whatever you think gives you clout. It doesn't, not really. That's a lie you've never believed. Give up your seat. Be what you are, unguarded, unprepared, and surrounded on all sides. Alone, you are a victim of no one and nothing. You are as ready as you will ever be. You were born ready. The possibilities are endless. Reject nothing. What appears in front of you is your liberation. That is, unless you judge it. Then you imprison yourself again. Now that you are free, see where you are. Observe what is needed. Do good quietly. If it's not done quietly, it's not good. Start over. Always start over. Even now, as you read along, are you formulating an objection to this in your mind? Because that's what I do, and that's what I have to stop. The endless imaginary debates, the pros and cons of this and that, they wear me out. Someone once asked my Zumi Roshi why he practiced, quote, "to make my heart tender," end of quote. In the Heart Sutra, Avalokiteshvara states that the five skandhas are empty. Five skandhas, as I mentioned, can be viewed as the five aggregates that comprise a human being. These five aggregates are best viewed as five rivers flowing in every one of us. In fact, they are really five rivers flowing together in us. The river of form, which means our body. The river of feelings. The river of perception. The river of mental formations. And the river of consciousness. They are always flowing or changing. So let's look at an example. Us humans. This comes back to the early teachings of the Buddha and his example of the chariot. So let's look at form. You know, it's always kind of funny to me when somebody shows a picture, a baby picture of someone, you know, at a family gathering, and they say, "Oh, that's me." Well, how do you know that? It's only, you only know that because your mother told you that, or your father. I mean, you look at the baby picture, how can you say that's you? You probably are about 4+ feet taller, weigh 100+ pounds more, hair is a different color, at least mine was, it's white now. Physique is different. You know, and the cells in our body change every 7 years. So just from the form perspective, how can we really say that we're the same now as back then? You know, when you take, if you were to take a piece of skin and put it under electron microscope, you know, what are you going to see? You're not going to see little embryos in there. You're going to see cells and molecules. You're going to see a lot of other things, but you're not going to see yourself in there. So just from the perspective of form, you know, it's really hard to say that you're the same person as back then. feelings, the other skanda. You know, love, sadness, joy. You know, a lot of those things have changed over the years. You know, so that's always flowing too. Perception, the way we view the world changes with time. You know, politics, family dynamics, you name it. You know, the way we see things and perceive things change always. Mental formation, the other skanda. Memory, you know, the mental images that we create in our minds change with time. You know, facts, you know, a picture of something a few years ago, you know, kind of gets a little fuzzy with time. You know, not the same any longer. And the other thing is, you know, if we were to take our, you know, somebody were to dissect us and lungs and kidneys and stomach and heart and all that stuff, put it all over a table, I mean, would you go and say to the lung, oh, that's me? That's only a part, see? And somebody always says, well, DNA can prove that what's in the picture is me. But aren't we more than just a molecule? You know? Feelings and form and mental formation, consciousness. That one DNA molecule is one very, very small piece. You know, here's an example, you know, just a thought experiment. You know, you hit the lottery, you make a lot of money, you quit your job, you go in retirement, and, you know, after about a year, you decide you're going to go and buy a new car. So you buy a new car, and you're bored, and you pull the car into the driveway, and you say, you know what, I think it'd be a really interesting experiment, since I have all the time in the world, I'm kind of bored. Let me replace every single part on this car. Radio, fenders, bumpers, everything. Right down to the last screw and bolt. Everything has changed. Is it the original car? Think about that. You know, the form part, is it the original car? Or is it something different? So we're not the same person that we were a few years ago. We're constantly changing. And therefore, we are empty of a fixed self. Avalokiteshvara looked deeply into the five skandhas of form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness, and discover that none of them can exist alone. Each can only exist in relationship to the others. So she tells us that form is empty. Form is empty of a separate self, but is full of everything in the cosmos. Same is true with feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. Another example, you know, this teaching bench. This teaching bench is another good example in discussing emptiness. At least the emptiness of form. It's brown, it's solid, it weighs a few pounds. It looks like it could last a long time. I'm leaning on it, it can support my weight. I can place books on it. But suppose that I take this bench outside and set it on fire and come back a few hours later. The bench is no longer there. This thing that seems so solid and strong and real is now just a pile of ash which will blow around in the wind. Therefore, the bench is empty. It is not a permanent thing. In fact, before we set it on fire, it was already changing. It was slowly being worn away with every use. It has no independent existence. And again, to use the electron microscope example, if you were to take a piece of this bench and look at it, you're going to see fiber, and you're going to see water molecules, and you're going to see all kinds of other stuff, but you're not going to see the teaching bench. Over a long or short period of time, the bench will eventually change and become something other than what it appears. So this bench is complete emptiness. But though it always has the quality of emptiness, this emptiness at this moment has form. I can lean on it, and again, it will support me. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. In order to really appreciate the concept of emptiness, we need to look at the interdependence of things, since emptiness and interdependence are related. Excuse me. The late Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh expressed this relationship very nicely at one of his retreats. Holding up a piece of paper, he said to his audience, "If you are a poet, you'll see clearly that there's a cloud floating in this piece of paper. Without a cloud, there will be no water. Without water, the trees cannot grow. And without trees, you cannot make paper. So the cloud is in here. The existence of this paper is dependent on the existence of the cloud. Paper and cloud are so close. Let us think of other things, like sunshine. Sunshine is very important because the forest cannot grow without sunshine, and we humans cannot exist without sunshine. So the logger needs sunshine in order to cut the tree, and the tree needs sunshine in order to be a tree. Therefore, you can see sunshine in this piece of paper. And if you look more deeply with the eyes of a bodhisattva, with the eyes of those who are awake, you see not only the cloud and the sunshine in it, but everything is here. The wheat that became the bread for the logger to eat, the logger's family, everything is in this piece of paper. You know, and if, you know, I'd like to add that if you look at this more deeply, you can see that we are in this stick-on as well. Because when we look at this piece of paper, it is part of our perception. Your mind is in here also, as I'm talking about this stick-on. You are processing what I'm saying about that piece of paper. So the skandhas of perception, mental formation, and consciousness are in that paper as well. So we can say that everything is in the piece of paper. Time, space, rain, minerals, the soil, the sun, the clouds, river, and heat. Everything coexists within that piece of paper. Therefore, this paper is empty of an independent self. Empty, in this sense, means that the paper is full of everything, the entire cosmos. When we truly sense this interconnectedness and the emptiness out of which all beings arise, we find liberation and a spacious joy. Discovering emptiness brings a lightness of heart, a flexibility, and an ease that rests in all things. More solidly we grasp our identity, more solid our problems become. And the reading that I shared earlier from Paradise in Plain Sight gets right to this point. In summary, I'd like to share a story of Zen master Nan Yin regarding emptiness. Nan Yin was a Japanese Zen master who lived from 1834 to 1904. And the story that I'm about to read is part of an article by Sensei Michael Brunner, founder and abbot of One River Zen Center, which is located on the outskirts of Chicago. And here's the story. In the bustling era of Meiji Japan, amidst a transformative period of modernization, there lived Zen master Nanyin, whose teachings continue to resonate across generations. Nanyin, renowned for his profound insights into Zen philosophy, once imparted a lesson to a curious university professor that transcends time and culture. The encounter between Nanyin and the professor serves as a poignant allegory for the existence of Zen practice. As the professor sought knowledge about Zen, Nanyin astutely perceived the limitations obstructing the flow of understanding. With a simple yet profound gesture, Nanyin poured tea into the professor's cup to its brim, and then continued pouring with the tea overflowing the cup and all over the place. Perplexed, the professor exclaimed that the cup can hold no more tea, to which Nanyin responded with gentle wisdom, "Like this cup, you are full of your own opinions and speculations. How can I show you Zen unless you first empty your cup?" Let me repeat that. "Like this cup, you are full of your own opinions and speculations. How can I show you Zen unless you first empty your cup?" This timeless anecdote encapsulates a core teaching of Zen: emptiness. The necessity of loosening our grip on preconceived notions and intellectual clutter to attain true insight and understanding. The cup symbolizes a mind clinging to concepts, beliefs, and prejudices, hindering the reception of new wisdom. Nanyin's invitation to empty your cup is an invitation to approach life with openness, humility, and receptivity, living in a state of wonder, the path of enlightenment. In our world, inundated with noise and distractions, the message of Nanyin resonates with profound relevance. The frenetic pace of modern life often leaves little room for introspection and stillness. Yet, amidst the chaos, the practice of Zen offers a sanctuary. When we take a step back and see the mind grasping at its concepts and ideals, labeling and narrating our lives, we can let go of that mind. The very act of being aware of this small mind opens us to our much larger true nature. Emptiness in the Zen tradition is not a state of void or absence, but rather a fertile ground for transformation and awakening. By relinquishing attachment to fixed ideas and embracing the boundless potentials of the unknown, one opens the door to profound insights and liberation from the constraints of the small self. Nanyin's teachings are not merely ancient ruminations from a dusty old tomb. They serve as a timeless reminder of the power of emptiness and the awakening to wisdom and enlightenment. As we navigate the complexities of existence, let us heed the wisdom of Nanyin and approach life with empty cups, ready to be filled with the ever-flowing stream of truth and beauty in this present infinite moment.